Hey, this is JP.
And I'm Kevin.
And you're in?
And we are Surfer Blood.
Surfer Blood. I've heard of those guys. They have this album called Pythons.
Uh-huh.
Have you heard anything about it?
You know, it's 10 songs, 30-something minute, easy breezy.
Easy? I don't know about that. The easy breezy. Easy breezy?
Well, it has its challenging moments, but I think it also
easy
flows
breezy.
Really nicely.
You know,
I contest that.
Do you contest the easy breezy part?
Yeah, it's to date our most complex work.
I like revisionist history, and there's so much that's been written about the same things over and over again. Not that we're going to avoid those same things,
right?
But tell me, each of you, something that's going to inform people, just like one or two lines that's going to inform people about this record, that is so counter to everything else that's been informing people about this record so far.
Yeah, this was. The first record that was really written like as a band in a practice space where we were rehearsing the songs like full band and really collaborating, where the first record was a lot of JP in his dorm room. This one is definitely a new approach in some ways.
Right.
It's actually, despite the slicker sound, it's actually the most organic thing we've done, because everything was played sort of with a live feel and a live idea, and it kind of came from that rather than just sort of copying and pasting stuff over each other. What else? I think it's the first time we really dug into lyrics and thought about them as something more than something you write in an hour or an afternoon. It was our first attempt to really make a cohesive lyrical piece, or my first attempt.
Okay, so this album is out, 2 months?
Right.
So I want to get right to it, because there's so many misquotes. Gil Norton as the producer, did you choose him? Did he choose you? Did the label?
For starting on Gil Norton, that gets confused a lot, because he actually was later in line. We were doing pre-production with several other producers.
Exactly.
At first, to try to find the right fit, and it has been in print that we were going into the studio with Phil Eck, which was originally the plan in Seattle at the beginning of 2012, but it got close to the time and we realized we were about to go on a tour before going into the studio, and we were supposed to be trying out a lot of the new songs, and realized going into this tour that we were about to just end and then go straight into the studio, that we didn't have enough material that we were satisfied with. We had to push it back, and then his schedule didn't work out with ours, but it worked out for the best, because then that's what got us in touch with Gil, someone who we'd been aware of and knew that he wanted to work with us, and we've always heard that we should work with him, but we had yet to really have a call with him. And once Phil didn't work out, we had the call with Gil, and that immediately won us over.
And if you had worked with Mr. Eck, you wouldn't have gotten anywhere near Michael Jackson's board or be recording next door to where Pet Sounds was done. You would have, right?
Timbaland or Justin Timberlake Renans.
Yeah, it would have been a completely, completely different experience, and probably a very different album. So do you ever visualize that? Do you ever, now that you listen to it, think, what would it have been like if we didn't record it there with that vibe? You know, this producer and all of that?
It is something that we've thought about, going back and listening to the demos, which are pretty much, you know, the songs in their purest, rawest form. There's definitely some things that are different, but I don't know, the songs were pretty constructed and pretty cohesive going into the studio. Because we knew we weren't going to have much time, and we knew we weren't going to have time to get stuck like we always have in the past. Doing home recordings, we've always hit brick walls. We've always spent way too long on stuff. And we knew we weren't going to have that option available to us. So, yeah, we knew what we wanted it to sound like going in.
And mixing with Rob.
Yes.
That added the icing on the cake, I would imagine.
It did. Rob was someone we were really interested in working with from the start. I'd met him a few times out in Los Angeles and really connected with him. You know, not to mention his body of work, which is outstanding. We got the original mixes back from Gil, and they just weren't what we were looking for. And he was in England, we were on the road, and it just wasn't really a conducive atmosphere to mix a record in, or to email about mixing a record in. And then Rob's name came up, and we honestly, you know, we had talked to him. We didn't know if he was still interested in working on this record that he didn't have any part in the tracking with. And he was really excited about it. So we spent 2 weeks in his little tiny studio in Eagle Rock. And Yeah, he was just very open and very easy to work with.
Okay, so let's see. Where shall we go? Let's get geeky. Guitar songs. More pedals than God.
We've accrued a lot of pedals.
A lot of the sounds from this record for like distorted guitars and whatnot came from a lot of amps that we were borrowing from a guitar tech that was friends with Gil, who lived out there and lent us these great old little, like a Supro and a Fender Champ, like old low watt amps that we would have all A-B'd up and have them just cranked to 10 and just really gained up. So it adds this creamy distortion that you sometimes can't get from a distortion pedal, a natural amp break. Have them just cranked to 10 and just really gained up. So it adds this creamy distortion that you sometimes can't get from a distortion pedal, a natural amp breakup.
So I spend a lot of time, and I don't know, maybe it's because of the bands that I like and the bands that I end up interviewing and playing, but I'll end up talking about the fact, and I'm going to do this kind of funny, you know, you got your Blair Witch, you got your Needles and Pins, you got your Blood, you got your Pythons. What a peppy, happy album it is, huh? What an up album. And yet it is. This is the thing that I want to debunk, because people, so much press, there's been so much time spent on, it's such a dark album and it's a personal album because of all of the things that have happened and, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And yet, I put it on and I'm like, it's a great pop album. Sorry to say, but it is.
It definitely has an arc to it, and I think everything we do, we attempt to be dynamic and write a bunch of different types of songs. So I think the A-side, if that were it, people would say that, you know, like, it's too poppy, it's too concise, it's too formulaic, you know? I think it needs the Needles and Pins and the Slow Six to sort of balance out the, you know, to
work for the Smiths.
Well, I mean, you know.
Did okay for them.
Yeah, Morrissey does a really good job of writing really depressing lyrics over a song like Cemetery Gates.
Yeah.
Which we like to do, too. You know, there's sort of a, you know, sort of a self-deprecating aspect to our lyrics in general. So I think that was sort of inevitable.
And I mean, the other thing is, if you really read what's been said a lot, and you've talked about it, then, oh my gosh, I guess that touring is pretty dark.
Touring?
Yeah, because a lot of this did come out of thoughts while on tour, did it not?
Yes. Well, we toured. We were always on tour. We lived on tour.
Yeah, you've never been off tour. Have you ever been off tour for more than 36 seconds?
It doesn't really feel like it sometimes.
I don't think you have. I've looked in your schedule. I don't think you've ever been off tour, ever. I love this quote from the NME. Bouncing back and doing it right. That's a quote from a review.
Well, I feel like we never really went away. If we weren't playing shows for a while, it's because we were recording a new record. But I don't know. What do you think? Bouncing back? I don't know. I think that's a little premature for a band that's been around for 3 years.
When that infamous Pitchfork interview happened, about that a band puts out a good record, and I've seen in 35 years of doing this, so many bands go through so many things.
Right.
That to me is, I hate to, I'm not belittling anything or taking it lightly, but that's right. Rock and roll. You go out there today and you're playing and you're surrounded by that. What brings you to the next level? What takes you to the place where we're sitting here today and we care about the music, we don't care about everything else that you've had to go through in the past couple of years to get you to this?
I think it definitely took a while to not be self-conscious and not to sort of have those thoughts come into your mind on stage. What's really, really helped me is connecting with a lot of our fans on like a personal level, on, you know, showing up at the merch table and hanging out, shaking hands, signing things. I mean, still see, you know, 16 and 17-year-old kids lining up to say hi and get really excited to take a picture. I think that sort of kind of keeps me going in a time where you feel like it's all bad news and it's all negativity. This record has almost everything, you know? And that's something that I've always felt really confident about while we're recording, mixing it. I've been told by some people that it's kind of a grower and it takes a few listens. Which is good. While we write accessible songs, we like to think that they're interesting enough and dense enough that you can get a lot out of a second, third, fourth listen.
I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich, and I've done this with 450 other bands. It's two of your songs is the bread, and then songs by anybody else you want to play in between.